Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Did you hear about our project called Nap Strategies? Lots of people want a nap. Lots more than actually can find a time or a place, especially during the workday. So we're encouraging you to find a way to take a nap sometime during the day. Last week, we had a call-in and some guests on developing their nap strategies. Now we're inviting you to look for your own nap strategy and tell everyone on our webpage how it worked. Here's one post from an employer, mind you, named Gustavo. He writes, "After listening to the podcast, I allowed one of my workers who was not feeling well to take a 20-minute nap to see if he felt better instead of sending him home. He woke up after 20 minutes on his own and finished the day fine. The 20-minute nap actually increased productivity." You can see everyone's nap strategies and add yours at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Well, as you know, General David Petraeus and U.S. Ambassador Ryan Crocker are testifying again today before congressional committees. Yesterday's Senate Armed Services Committee hearing was unusual for having questions asked by all three presidential hopefuls. It was Barack Obama who probably went out on the biggest limb with this proposal for a policy shift.
I think what happened in Basra is an example of Shia versus Shia jockeying for power that underscores how complicated the political situation is there and how we still have to continue to work vigorously to resolve it. I believe that we are more likely to resolve it, in your own words, Ambassador, if we are applying increased pressure in a measured way. I think that increased pressure in a measured way, in my mind, and this is where we disagree, includes a timetable for withdrawal. Nobody's asking for a precipitous withdrawal, but I do think that it has to be a measured but increased pressure and a diplomatic surge that includes Iran. Because if Maliki can tolerate as normal neighbor-to-neighbor relations in Iran, then we should be talking to them as well. I do not believe we're going to be able to stabilize the situation without them.
It's a diplomatic surge that includes Iran. Looking at websites from around the world this morning, Obama's comments seem to stand out more in foreign press coverage than here. Go Google it and check it out. But let's talk about Obama, Iran, and the Iraq War under the next president with Fawaz Jurjess, professor of Middle East and International Affairs at Sarah Lawrence College, author of books including Journey of the Jihadist, Inside Muslim Militancy, and Michael Hirsch, senior editor at Newsweek in the Washington Bureau. Welcome back, both of you, to WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning.
And do we have Fawaz?
Yes, I'm
okay,
here.
Hi. Michael, Obama had previously come out for one round of talks with Iran with no preconditions, or with Ahmadinejad. This had made big news before. Did he go further on Iran yesterday, as you heard it, than he had before?
No, not really. He was acknowledging what not only he but many other observers of the scene have concluded, which is that Iran is such a key player and really getting bigger as a player in terms of the way it's influencing the Shiite dominated government in Iraq, to not engage Iran on a broad based level means we're missing just a huge variable in the future success of Iraq. And I don't think what he said yesterday was markedly different from what he said.
How different is it from Hillary Clinton's position or John McCain's position?
Very different. Obviously, when Obama first made that comment about engaging Iran without preconditions during one of the debates, he was hammered by Hillary and her campaign for being naive. McCain has said, quite plainly that he would not meet with the Iranian government at all while it continues to, embrace Holocaust denial and endorse violence towards Israel and the destruction of Israel, which, of course, means that he won't be talking to it. So This is a very, very plain difference between the three candidates along a spectrum of Obama, who would immediately change course vis-a-vis Iran, Hillary, who would probably pursue some of the same diplomatic initiatives that are being pursued now by Condoleezza Rice, the Secretary of State, and McCain, who would take perhaps an even harder line.
Fawaz Erjaz, can you imagine a diplomatic surge with Iran? To take Obama's term at face value, diplomatic surge that includes Iran, what might that look like?
Well, Brian, let's be very clear about one point. I don't think the United States of America can exit Iraq and maintain its credibility and deterrence without politically engaging Iran. Iran now, Brian, is the most influential player in Iraq. Iran, not the United States, is the most important pivotal player in Iraq. And as you know, the Basra fighting last month showed very clearly that, in fact, Iran has succeeded in co-opting most of the influential Shia political communities and factions, including Muqtada Sadr, the nationalist radical Shia leader, who basically was an anti-Iranian voice when the United States invaded and occupied Iraq.
He was what? He was an anti...
He was an anti-Iranian voice. Muqtada Sadr was one of the most anti-Iranian voice amongst the Shia political groups.
How did he get co-opted, as you put it?
And this is why, I mean, I think even Muqtada Sadr realizes that Iran is there to stay, that Iran has influence, that Iran provides arms, Iran provides money, and Iran provides protection. I mean, look where Muqtada Sadr is today, Brian. Muqtada Sadr has been in Iran for quite a few months.
Yeah, and he said when deciding whether he's going to end the ceasefire or perhaps even disband his military, he's considering all those options. He says he needs to consult with his spiritual leaders in Iraq and Iran.
Absolutely. I mean, the point I'm trying to make, Brian, is the following. If you listen carefully to the Bush administration and even American military commanders, they argue and assert that Iran basically is the most destructive force in Iraq because it has basically armed and financed gangsters and militias groups. Yes, to a certain extent, yes. But what American officials, I mean, basically neglect to mention is that Iran has co-opted all the powerful and influential Shiite communities, and thus...
In fact, I read that Iran, maybe you can shed some light on this, I read that Iran recently helped to negotiate a ceasefire between fighting Shiite factions in southern Iraq.
Brian, the ceasefire agreement you just mentioned, it was brokered by Iran in the Iranian holy city Qom. It came from Iran. It didn't come from Iraq itself. I mean, look at the irony here. The United States of America intervened in the intra-Shiite fightings in Basra and Baghdad in the southern Shiite areas, while Iran emerged as a mediator, a broker,
yes,
between the various elements.
And so Michael Hirsch from Newsweek, has Obama answered the question, how could Ahmadinejad, who seems incorrigible, possibly be brought into anything that helps the United States in Iraq?
Well, he hasn't gone to that level of specificity. I think that, you know, he and his campaign have said, look, you know, there are other power centers in Iran besides Ahmadinejad, and that is true. We know, for example, that, I mean, it's 5 years ago, you know, today, that Baghdad was captured by American forces, and at that time, before the vulnerability of the U.S. in Iraq became apparent with the growth of the insurgency, there were definitely factions of the Iranian government that were, you know, rather eager to negotiate a broad-based agreement. Now, with the United States. Now, this is the key point here. The Bush administration has kind of created these artificial divisions. We'll talk with the Iranians about Iraq and these ambassadorial levels that Ryan Crocker is conducting in Baghdad, and then we'll, you know, talk with them separately with the Europeans taking lead over nuclear weapons and so forth. What the Iranians have indicated since those early days of 2003 that they're interested in is a set of broad-based talks, government to government, over all of these issues. And I think that that's what Obama is referring to. And frankly, there's a good argument to be made that that's really the only way out.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, an interesting moment from the hearings. Did this break out? Just, Michael, tell me real quick, because it jumped out at me when I heard him say that at the hearings. And then, as I said at the top, it seems to be making bigger news on foreign news organizations' websites than domestic news organizations' websites. I don't know. To my ear, it sounded like he went further than just saying, I would have one meeting with Ahmadinejad with no preconditions, like he said in that debate months ago. And, you know, and I would hammer him to do the right thing, blah, blah, blah. Here he talked about a diplomatic surge, including Iran. That sounds like a lot more than one skeptical meeting.
No, that's right. And I think he's, you know, he's definitely, his view is evolving. But remember, this was all mainly about Iraq and how to solve the problem in Iraq. And as your other guest just, you know, just said, there is just no way to withdraw at any foreseeable point from Iraq if Iran is not engaged somehow in forging a solution with the government that remains behind.
Right.
And you simply can't do it without without talking with them.
We just have 30 seconds. Do you know, Michael, if Crocker responded substantively to that remark? Because it was part of a question to him.
No, I mean, I think that, you know, again, Crocker has been conducting these sporadic meetings with the Iranian ambassador, but Crocker, you know, is not authorized to sort of play on that at that pay level of making a strategic decision to engage Iran in the way we're talking about.
Michael Hirsch from Newsweek, Fawaz Jurjess from Sarah Lawrence, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Coming up in a minute, a radio debate about internet debate. Stay with us.